KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Adams Point.
I'm from East Oakland.
I live in West Oakland.
Tenderloin.
The Mission.
I live in the Bayview, Hunters Point in San Francisco.
Coming up, how women are slowly picking up a drug that prevents HIV.
As a matter of fact, I got PrEP in my bag right now.
Yeah, the big blue one is Truvada.
Then a veteran graffiti artist paints a memorial to help Oakland's Fruitvale community grieve the Ghost Ship fire.
I mean, it was something that I felt as an artist to other artists that was important.
And we're taking you on a waterway tour of a little-known island in the East Bay.
Just about the furthest you can get on East Conococ County.
Charting new waters, coming up on Cross Current. Stay with us. Did you know that you can take a drug to reduce your risk of getting HIV? If you're a gay man, you've probably heard of it. It's a daily regimen called PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis. Maybe you've even seen ads for it on BART trains or clinic brochures, usually targeting men who sleep with other men. But PrEP doesn't only benefit men, and some women and trans people are wondering why a drug that could potentially save their lives hasn't been aggressively promoted in their communities. Reporter Chloe Lessard has the story.
I have a 7-year-old, and I'm like, you know, I give her medicine every day, you know, take religiously so she won't, you know, get sick. She has asthma, eczema, allergies, all type of stuff. Something just clicked, like, why can't I do that for myself?
Tamaya Green lives with her 7-year-old daughter in West Oakland. She's in a monogamous relationship and takes a pill called PrEP once a day to prevent HIV. Green says it wasn't a small matter to start taking it last September.
It was a very big decision for the simple fact that you hear the stipulations of they're going to give you HIV, you're going to die, you're in this study, you're part of an experiment. Why would you do that? You know, something's going to happen to you.
The history of unethical medical experimentation on African Americans can make pushing a new drug into the community challenging. People are suspicious. At the same time, among women in the U.S., African Americans have the highest rates of HIV. Green does community PrEP outreach. Basically, she talks to friends, families, and strangers about the drug. She thinks that women respond differently to PrEP than men.
Because when I talk to women, I think some women are shy. Some women are kind of like, don't know how to approach the situation. Some people feel kind of like, do they have that right?
Mommy, can I see the phone?
No.
PrEP contains Truvada, a drug also used to treat HIV. It can reduce the risk of contracting the disease from sex by 90%. But early on, it wasn't entirely clear whether PrEP was as useful for females. The first PrEP study that showed the drug to be effective was published in 2010, but it focused solely on gay males. The studies on females didn't come out until 2011, 2012, and had mixed results. Alan McCord is director of education at the HIV organization Project Inform in San Francisco.
So what you ended up having was several different studies in women, heterosexual women, three of which that did not quite show efficacy, one that showed significant efficacy. And what do you do with that data then?
Plus, HIV isn't as prevalent among women as gay males, says McCord. So even though the CDC estimates that almost 500,000 heterosexual women in the U.S. could benefit from PrEP, about the same number as gay men, most outreach is focused on gay males. To get women on PrEP, health providers and educators need to openly talk to women about it. But women also have to be willing to try it.
As a matter of fact, I got PrEP in my bag right now.
Yeah, the big blue one is Truvada.
Diamond Electra Star, real name McKeel Taylor, lives in San Francisco. She also works at Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital as an orderly and is studying to pass her GED. She's been on PrEP for over a year. Diamond used to be a sex worker and didn't want to put herself or her clients at risk.
I don't call my clients tricks. And the reason why is a trick is someone you're tricking. No, this man knows everything about me. When I get in his car, he knows what's up.
HIVE, a clinic at the University of California in San Francisco, works to get at-risk women on PrEP. That's where Diamond connected with the clinic's director, Shannon Weber.
Come to find out, we've known each other a lot longer than that. It was through a Pride gathering, we're going to say, and we sat next to each other. Come to find out, flashback, I petted her on her leg. Yes, I did. Yes.
I realized that if not all people had access to PrEP, women certainly wouldn't. Because even from early on in the U.S., women were left out of the PrEP conversation.
Though the FDA approved Truvada for HIV pre-exposure use in 2012, Weber first became interested in PrEP 6 years earlier.
So I worked in women's health for a long time. One of my passions is helping HIV-affected couples to have babies. The possibility of using PrEP really expanded those options for couples.
Weber says that the drug may be helpful for many types of women, those who have a known HIV-positive male partner, partners of unknown status, or multiple partners. But getting women on PrEP is not easy.
One, women don't know about PrEP. When women find out that PrEP works for them, they're angry that they don't know about it. Two, that we know generally about women that we're not always good at knowing when we're vulnerable to HIV.
Diamond started taking PrEP after she had unprotected sex with a boyfriend. She didn't know his status, so she panicked and rushed to a local clinic where they gave her post-exposure HIV medication. She was reluctant to go back to her sex work.
Because I'm working the streets also. I do have a conscience. These people have a family. These people have a life. These people have kids. These people have a wife. If you mess up these people's life, that's messing up your life because that's hurting your pocket. So you flat broke and you off the block.
After a few months of tests, Diamond found out she was clean, but she realized the risk she was taking.
I immediately went to San Francisco AIDS Foundation. And I keep hearing about PrEP and PrEP and PrEP and PrEP. So I got so tired of hearing about it. I said, okay, I'm in right now. I'm signing up.
At Lifelong Clinic in Oakland, there's an ongoing study looking at how willing women are to take the drug. Kimberly Kester at the UCSF Center for AIDS Prevention Studies is one of the researchers. She says enrolling women has not been simple.
I take a deep breath because it is taking us a long time to enroll 50 women. We were hoping to be fully enrolled by December 2016.
But Kester says that's part of the study question. Will women actually be receptive? Diamond Electra Starr, who no longer works the streets, is now a patient advocate and says she'll share her experiences with anyone who asks.
I show my pills to everybody. I'm not ashamed. When I'm at school, I put my meds right there on my desk.
Even though the project that paid Tamaya Green for her outreach work has lost funding, she says she still plans to continue her outreach on her own time to help reduce stigma around the drug.
So I think it's about just protecting yourself and knowing that you're worth it and that it's okay and not to be ashamed if you're taking a pill to help better yourself.
Public awareness about PrEP is gradually increasing. In December, San Francisco hosted the first National PrEP Summit, and outreach is now extending towards women and trans individuals. As research and education improves, women will share their own sexual health stories with their friends and loved ones, and slowly, PrEP may just become part of the conversation. In San Francisco, I'm Chloe Lessard for Cross Currents.
You can visit prepme.org to find a PrEP provider near you. We've got a link at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. This next piece is a collaboration with our friends at Oakland Voices, a project where East Oakland residents tell the stories of their own neighborhoods. For some Oaklanders who live and work near the remains of the Ghost Ship Warehouse, where 36 people died in a fire in December, trying to push past grief is difficult. Reclaiming a sense of normalcy is in the presence of what feels like a mass gravesite at the heart of their neighborhood.
You know, this tragedy was very reminiscent of 9/11 in a smaller way to me. For the Bay Area, for Oakland, it was very much like that.
Oakland Voices correspondent Kat Ferreira lives near the remains of the Ghost Ship. She brings us this story about how a new mural helps some neighbors process the tragedy and move on.
It's spring, and my neighborhood is humming with all the usual day-to-day hustle. Cars and buses rumble down potholed International Boulevard towards Fruitvale Avenue. Old men sell paletas out of their sidewalk push carts, and brave crossing guards stop traffic to help kids get to school. If you didn't know any better, you might think everyone forgot about what happened here 4 months ago. But some nights I look out my back door and I can still see the tall billows of angry smoke as clearly as I did on December 2nd. Today, the blackened shell of the Ghost Ship Warehouse still stands, stretching above its chain-link fence and makeshift memorials like an open wound too big for its bandage. Al Garcia works across the street at Reed Supply, a bustling mom-and-pop appliance store located on Fruitvale Avenue.
I think a lot of people here are just numb from the fact that it happened so close. It hasn't gone away. It's just like it happened yesterday. I was here the night of the fire. It to me, it's just no different than it was the night of the fire. I live it daily.
Reed Supply has been a fixture in the Fruitvale neighborhood since 1956. An Oakland native, Al has worked at the shop for 42 years.
Hi. I'm good. How are you? What's going on?
I'm interested in the washing machine. And do I get a warranty?
30 days automatic.
30 days automatic, okay.
I'm not opposed to the building. I grew up here, you know, and it was a dairy then, and we used to play in there as kids. To me, that building brings back good memories to me, as a childhood and what have you, but you know, I'm just opposed to what's on the outside of the building.
Al's referring to some of the paintings on the front of the warehouse, paintings that predate the fire. The building had been an underground gathering and living space for artists for years. Sometime in 2016, shortly before the fire, someone painted the words Ghost Ship on the front wall and other artwork, including an ominous black and white skull rising from the window in a trail of smoke. The image was often featured in news coverage of the fire, and it's still there today.
I can say that it's time for it. I think the city maybe to step in and do something about doing something either with the exterior of the building or tear the building down completely, whichever. But I think it's offensive the way they have it currently with the skeleton painting on the front and the fence around it. You know, it's just, I think we got enough fences. I think that even the people that come to memorialize, if you will, I don't think they really want to see that skeleton on the side of the building.
When you stand at the shop counter and look across the street, the doorway creates a haunting frame around the bug-eyed black and white skull.
I think it's disgusting. I just don't think that it's appropriate to have that on there after the tragedy. And as for the folks that died, they should be remembered. And I think the artist community has tried to put their foot forward to try to get something going.
Al's right. Since the fire, Oakland's artist community has responded to the tragedy. After initial outpourings of grief and donations, Oakland's artists and activists sprung into action, creating DIY fire safety groups and challenging the city's broken code compliance system. And in February, a veteran aerosol artist painted a mural about 10 blocks away from the warehouse in honor of the victims who died in the fire. Norman Chuck, who goes by the moniker Vogue, didn't know any of the people who died personally. But as soon as he heard the news back in December, Vogue says he knew he had to paint something in their honor.
When it happened, I was sick. So I spent a lot of time sitting on the couch, like just going, man, wish I could do something.
Weeks after the fire, through the serendipity of Oakland's tight-knit artist community, an opportunity presented itself.
I was painting another gig elsewhere in West Oakland, and one of the survivors actually was on the crew, film crew, that was taping me. My other partners that were with me realized, hey, he was on TV. So then one of them just bluntly asked him, like, hey, weren't you on TV for something? And he was like, yeah, I'm a Ghost Ship survivor. So you know, we got to talk to a little about him. And then I told Sage, you got to get down here, like, today, like, right now. Talk to this guy, get some information. It'll help add to this, possibly.
Vogue called Sage Loring, a street art lover and curator known as Fuming Gorilla. Sage is the co-founder of Dragon School, a nonprofit that helps youth with street art making opportunities in Oakland's Chinatown. He also specializes in connecting muralists with business owners whose properties serve as canvases. For this project with Vogue, Sage says he took special care in consulting survivors and finding a site for the ghost ship mural.
The idea at first to do a dedication mural sounds wonderful, but because of the severity of what happened, the fire and all the people lost their lives, you don't want to approach that without being a little sensitive to the issue. So we got the feedback first and foremost of people that were directly affected. And then the next thing was, what's a good location? I didn't want it to be too close. I don't think that was the right approach. You don't want to have it on that site necessarily, but in the general area that represents where it happened.
The mural's location on East 12th Street is about 10 blocks from the Ghost Ship Warehouse. It's also not far from the 23rd Avenue rail yards, where Vogue and other founding members of the TDK crew, or Those Damn Kids as they were once known, crafted their art back in the 80s and 90s. Painting a mural that honors the next generation of Bay Area artists whose lives were cut short by the fire is a way for Vogue to give something back.
Even though I live in San Leandro, Oakland made and created me. They helped me. I was able to come here as a young teen, paint in the Oakland Fruitvale tracks when there was nothing. Like, everything was pushed there into that one particular area. And so for many years, that's where I kind of groomed myself. I mean, I'm in the point and position now. Before, I was like just one of these other kids running around the streets, and now, like, I feel like I have a bigger voice now.
During the weeks of sketching potential mural designs, Vogue considered input from ghost ship survivors, friends, and family. But it was Vogue's wife, Gloria Contreras, who most influenced the final design. A wooden ship in full sail, floating above clouds of smoke into a heavenly sunset, followed by 36 doves.
I wanted it to be more about healing. You know, like, you could look at it and you could actually feel it, maybe make every day a little better, know they're in a better place. Not something spiritual, not necessarily religious or gloomy, or, but yeah, something you could, that could help heal.
Gloria grew up in Fruitvale and still has family in the neighborhood. She didn't like how some of the early mural designs referenced the objects and art installations associated with the Ghost Ship Warehouse. Gloria thought the mural should be about the people, not the building where they died.
The fact that there's a dove representing each person. So that's, I think, was really important to have each person count, to not just have a name, but to actually look at a dove and think, okay, they're together. They're in the same journey.
Actually, as while I was painting, like, people would come and stop, and I was on the lift a lot of the times. But I looked down, I remember seeing one lady in particular, and she was just like, that's so beautiful, and thanking me for doing it, but she was crying.
As time passes, the Fruitvale neighborhood is moving on, thanks in part to Vogue's memorial. But political fallout from the fire still hangs in the air all over Oakland. Gentrification was already impacting my community before the fire. My neighbors and I wonder, will luxury condos be built where the Ghost Ship Warehouse once stood? Will it become housing for artists again? What changes will the future bring? In Oakland, I'm Kat Ferreira for Cross Currents.
That story is part of our Sights and Sounds of East Oakland project. It's a collaboration with Oakland Voices, a community media training program. It's run in partnership with the East Bay Times and the Maynard Institute for Journalism Education. And come out and see more stories of East Oakland performed live, along with music and dance. That's this Sunday at Castlemont High School. For all the details and tickets, go to klw.org.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KLW's Nina Gensler-Debs.
For today's story, we're bringing you sounds from the far-flung fringes of the Bay Area. KLW's Ashley Ann Krigbaum and her dad have more.
Stroke, stroke.
Carl Krigbaum, Ashley Ann's dad. And we're on Bethel Island, out in the Delta.
This is really special. I've never had a tour by my dad before of the water. So from these waterways, from right here, we could get to the bay. We could go up the river to Sacramento. You can go
Sacramento,
everywhere.
Go up to Stockton. Just about the furthest you can get on East Conecuh County. Growing up out here, I could have went anywhere on the island I wanted to go, as long as I didn't go over the bridge. Dad was fine with that. We lived right down in the main part of town, and the only time you see any cars go by is a few people that went to the post office, because they don't deliver mail to the houses out here.
But you've got the people in the morning at coffee.
Yeah, you know, it's like any little town, you know, you got your little morning coffee shop, and locals go and complain about everything, make big decisions. No, it's nice, nice, quiet, and peaceful. There's a couple of islands don't have hardly any house at all on it. A couple farmhouses and a few trees, nice and green levees. And the other side, there's another island with boats and houses on it all the way around almost. Well, how'd you like your ride?
That was awesome. Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome.
Do you have an idea for a Bay Area sound that's great for Audiograph? Tell us about it. Call 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We love hearing from you.
And that's all from us today. The Cross Currents team includes Josiah Luis Alderete, Nina Gensler-Debs, Lila Day, Nicole Grigg, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Greer McVeigh, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff, and the line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Dirty Denim, an all-girl band using elements of 60s garage rock and garage punk. Catch them this Sunday at Bottom of the Hill in their hometown of San Francisco. All the details are at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.